Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Welcome to another episode of the Bandwagon Podcast, and today's guest is, and I always go back to my list of when I first started the podcast, and the person joining me today was one of the first I ever wrote down on that list. Gave me a chance when I was on BritAsia TV with one of the programs that he was doing at the time called Real Talk. And we connected quite heavily during that period where, you know, discussing things, you know, even off camera as well. And to have that opportunity to, especially with your one of your childhood heroes from a musical background, was amazing. And the fact that he comes from the same place from where I grew up, and this podcast consistently always talks about the B21 area, Handsworth, B20. You know, I mean, it's amazing that to show and demonstrate that someone from that area, what they've achieved and what they still consistently achieve is massive. So my guest today is a cultural icon. His legacy is amazing. He's a philanthropist supporting so much of the current work in the youth, and an activist as well. So without further ado, welcome to Apache Indian.
Thank you very much, Ricky. That was a wonderful intro there, and it's been great to know you, and you went back just through my memory back to when we met and the things that we've done, and there's been a lot in between. So great to join you today. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Yeah, I was hoping to do this in person because I thought, you'd be one of the easiest guys to get on. You're just literally down the road. But when we connected and I found out that you're up north, I was like, oh my God, when did this happen?
I mean, my heart is always in Birmingham. I've moved around a lot over the years. But yes, so now I live in Glasgow. And there is a reason behind that. And the reason is very simply because I fell in love with someone in Glasgow. A beautiful lady. Her name is Yasmin. So I will be getting married soon. So that's why you want to start off your podcast with some exclusive news there, right? And it's very simple as that. But Glasgow is a beautiful city. I love Glasgow. Big respect to everyone that's made me feel welcome here.
Congratulations on that, just to start off with. I know what everyone's going to buy you as a wedding present, a coat. It's free. Right. So, and the fact that your hair has gone back to, you know, from what your album covers were, when I was looking back and looking at it, it was like, this is like a renaissance.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is the hair, I mean, it had nothing, I mean, it wasn't planned or anything. It was, the hair got too long. I was thinking about cutting it for a while, just for health reasons. I mean, carrying 5 foot of hair around, it affects probably every part of your life, from sitting to sleeping to having a shower to, I mean, literally swimming, whatever it may be, sitting on a flight, it becomes a pillow sometimes. I mean, it became, you know, it starts pulling at your head as well. So for lots of reasons, I was thinking about cutting my hair for a while. So, 25 years later, so
you know, it's probably a bit of a sick question in that way, but how did it feel when once it was off there? Did you just feel a massive weight off your shoulders, literally?
No, I missed my dreadlocks, to tell you the truth. It became a part of me. I mean, it's my hair, and people think that it was a wig or this, or, you know, weave in there. I mean, it's my hair to have it that long, and, you know, there's something spiritual about it, something beautiful about it. So it takes me back to the, you know, the early pictures of growing up, you see Shivaji, you know what I mean, as a Hindu family, and it's dreadlocks, and then obviously Bob Marley and reggae. So had all this significance kind of in my life, if you like. So it's there. You don't have to be dread to be Rasta. That's the name of the song.
So you touched a little bit on your life there. And as you're getting older and coming up to a landmark birthday in a few years' time, I won't kind of disclose it. I'm polite like that.
60 is good. It's not, the age is good. And the age makes you want to carry on, to tell you the truth. You give thanks for health and strength and everything that you've done up to that age. And what can you say? Just give blessings and you know, all the stories and messages from everyone wants to keep you going. So, you know, when you're 20, you can have all the hits in the world and you can have it, but do you know what you're doing when you're 40? I used to ask people that question. Do you really know what you're going to be doing 40? Do you know how many kids you're going to have, where you're going to be living? By the time you're 40, you know what you're doing at 40. So you actually pay, oh, I've been doing this for 24 hours. Oh, so this must be in my calling in life. So you actually pay more attention to it. And it gives you another spur, if you like, and thinking, okay, let's do this. So, you know, that's how life is. That's how I look at it.
Your career in itself is covered in so many different layers. You know, it can a conversation with you can go in many, many different angles. But I just want to start in terms of like growing up in Handsworth, especially born in the late 60s, and then growing up in the 70s and early 80s. I've obviously heard a lot of stories where my dad, my we grew up. I was born on Linwood Road, so my dad always used to tell me, you know, stories about the riots, and
Right.
just the general kind of camaraderie with loads of cultures that were there at the time. How did that multicultural environment shape your personal identity and your musical identity?
It's a very, very good question. To start off with the personal, because it always starts off being personal, and obviously growing up in, you know, I grew up in on Holly Road, around the corner from you, opposite the parks. So you're growing up with the culture right on the doorstep. You're hearing the beeline, the bass line coming from the park, the carnivals, the sound systems are playing. You're at home, you're hearing music, you're hearing languages that are, you know, it's not that it's foreign to you, but it comes from still India. You're growing up in England, right? So you're still trying to catch a Hindi, still trying to catch a Punjabi. You're not fully catching it. I was the kid that couldn't speak Punjabi that well when I was growing up. And so there was all this around you. And you know, some people could look at it as a divide, and you had riots and you had racial tensions, which you will get. And we talk about loads of cultures. There's loads of cultures now. There wasn't loads of cultures then. There was a few. So, you know, you had the culture from Caribbean, you had the India, Asia, Pakistan, Bangladesh, you had that. So it wasn't so much Eastern Europeans. It was, so you had this kind of right there, and it was all about trying to make it gel and trying to make it work. And going right back, because people ask me the question about the reggae, and I say, I come from Handsworth and, you know, sound systems, and why do you sing like that and all that? And the truth is that I never used to answer this question correctly. And it's only up to about 10 years I started thinking about my life right from day one, how your life makes a difference in those first early years. So my mother and father are from Punjab, Jalandhar. And when they came over, they went straight into work. So there was no nurseries at that time. It was always school started at 5. So I was actually dropped off to the nanny next door, Miss Codrington, late great Miss Codrington, God bless you. And she was from Jamaica. So she was from the Windrush generation. So, you know, very, very just, you know, you can hear the Jamaican language. I'm in a household, Jamaican household, for 8 hours a day, for 5 days a week, you know, for the first 5 years of my life, and then go to an Indian household. So there it is on a personal level. There's a story right there. It starts there, because when I did what I did, or I speak how I speak, or how I am, it's a reflection of all that, of who, you know, who I was around, what I was exposed to. Not just music, in Miss Codrington's house. It was culture. It was the whole culture. You can't just sing on the mic and say, I can do this. What about understanding a culture? So there was culture, there was multicultural, there was a very rich culture from home, Diwali festivals and all the culture, and mom and dad trying to teach you as much as they can teach you. There's languages. So what did I do, you know, from then you're going on to a, from a music point of view, what did I do when I went in the studio? I shared that story. I put all that together. Was it a formula for success? Was it, I just wanted to make one song, and it was 1989, and I put all those elements together, and look what happened. So I always tell people, you know, your unique point is your story. All those artists are trying to, you know, it's okay to influence people, inspire people. People inspired me, but you have to give your story in your art. Your painting has to be your painting. That music has to be something about you. I'm the Don Raja and this and that, whatever it may be. You have to say, you have to tell me who you are and what you're talking about. So make it unique to yourself. And that story was mine. I shared it with the music to try to maybe find identity. I don't know, to air it. I don't know. We have to find identity back in the day. Where do we belong and who are we? So, you know, the music created that space, if you like. It created a space on the shelf that wasn't there before. So it gave us all identity, if you like. So we were all a part of that movement. So important. I didn't say I went to make it happen. The music made it happen, but I just followed my story. I followed what was in front of me and passions, the dreams, the enjoying life and the cultures around me. Celebrate that multiculture. Don't really hold anything back. Celebrate it in front of you. It's yours. It doesn't belong to anyone else. It's yours. And as I travel around the world, I don't see that multiculture in every city. So we have something special here. We have something special. So Chinese, this, that, whatever it may be, fashion, culture, you're licensed to be a part of that multiculture. Do it with pride. And I do.
Do you still see this whenever you get the rare chance to kind of go back now, obviously with distance being a big thing? How do you still, I'll be honest with me, sometimes I really struggle when I've gone back to Handsworth. I used to get my hair cut there for a long time, even though after I moved out of the area, when I got back, little things like people's front walls, there used to be character in there. Like my granddad built the front wall of our house, and then the council came in and made everyone's front wall look the same. They all had character. There was all everything from them. As that slowly dissolved away, I really struggled to kind of connect back with home. As the environment changes, and Soho Road in itself, I took someone down there recently, and I was painting a picture of something that they thought they've seen on music and whatnot, but it was completely different. Yeah. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I do agree with you. I absolutely do agree with you, and that's why for people that don't know, you know, I went back and set up an academy right there in Handsworth on the Soho Road. In collaboration with a college, South City College, big respect to them, to get right to the grassroots of where I was born, because, you know, you're proud of it, but you're sad. You're sad some of the things that you see. And then I take it back to what I believe in. I take it back to community. Let's go back to community. We've shut down the youth clubs. We've shut down certain places, but then we wonder why, what's happening on the streets. Why is it happening that way? What are we doing on a street level? Homelessness, drug issues, alcohol abuse, all these things. I didn't hear them acknowledged or spoke about in the last elections. I didn't see anything come up politically. So we're suffering on a street level. So it doesn't make us not be proud to love Birmingham, celebrate what we do have there, and it will never change. And to remind the people that recently did a song called Brumtown, to remind people who's from that city, what we represent, cultures, songs, dancing, you know, multicultural that's gone from that city and inspired the whole world. Steel Pulse, Musical Youth, UB40. I mean, how much music and culture we have. So sometimes you remind the generations that you have a responsibility again to make this place special and build it up. But it's a message, you know, to everyone, from schools to colleges to politicians. It's sad to see, not only in Handsworth, you know, it's the face of the country. A lot of these inner cities are suffering, and we tend to talk about all the nice things all the time. Let's work with the youth more. Let's support charities more. There should be more policies. I want to see policies in place. You know, things need to change. Don't even get me started on the politics.
Go for it. This is the space because, like, I think one of the unique things is that in here is that it's not in a long form conversation. People rarely get to hear the opinions of, you know, people who they know or they've heard of over the years. I mean, you have 3 minutes on a song to put a message across.
Yeah.
You know, what could you do in 45 minutes when you're having a conversation? So,
yeah. And let's say, yeah, that's the great point. What can you do if you had 45 minutes and it's 3 minutes a song? So let me take that example and say to you then, if I wrote a song about the issues that I'm bothered about on the street and all that, at some point in my life, I'm going to want to not just make it a song or a podcast. I want to go and do something about it. I want to go out there. Otherwise, it was only a song and an idea. So I make that passion of that song makes me want to go back and run that academy in between touring around the world and give my time to say, not to say I know it, or just saying I'm here. I want to be a part of a team that, you know, we had the police walking in, we had counselors walking in. This became a hub. So going back to what I was saying before about ideas, is like we talk about things that we don't have, for example, youth clubs shutting down. Let's say youth clubs and things shutting down. Don't we have schools and colleges that we pay for our tax money? Yeah, we have a school. Every whatever, every little town, we have a school. So that school, when it shuts at 4 or 5 o'clock, Can it become a youth club? It's heated, it's paid by us, it's got tables, it's got chairs. That was my idea with the academy. And then the mayor rang me up. He goes, "How did you do that?" I said, "I'm using what we've got, not what we haven't got. We've already got this, a spare room or the tables and the chairs." In fact, when I walked in the college, someone said, "You know, these tables and chairs, they belong to you." I said, "What do you mean?" They said, "Well, your mom and dad paid for all the taxes. This is at them. So you use it, you tell me what you want to do with it." So we have to really start thinking about that and how we can contribute to making these places. Doesn't matter if you move out of Birmingham, there's a problem. There's problems in the UK that are not dealt with really on that grassroots. People are falling through the net, they're suffering. And then people like us are picking up those pieces. The politicians are already talking about that they've failed already. They just got in. Everyone's always saying that you failed and you're doing this and you're doing that. It leaves people like school teachers and local MPs and yourself and me to try to do something about it. And otherwise, what's the name of the fame for, Ricky? You know what I mean? What's it called?
Not you know because I did mention it slightly during the week when we were on an Insta live, but I was going to save it towards the end, but I think it's just right now because in terms of social issues, when I remember your album with Nuff Vibes when that came out, and I remember buying that in Luton Woolworths. Because it was one of my first albums I ever spent money on to get. And at the time, obviously, how young I was, I can't remember when it came out with it, what year it was exactly.
93.
93, that's right. Yeah. So I was about 11, 12 at that point. I remember there was a song out there called AIDS Warning.
That's right, yeah.
And it was the first time, obviously, that as a blood-borne virus, and it's ironic that my career went into substance misuse and dealing with getting some knowledge around bloodborne viruses. But I remember that song, why it stood out to me, and I always used to just have that on replay. Was for I don't know why it was just on there. It just sounded different. And
Yeah.
then you go and understand what it's about and health and all these other parts. So your messaging just wasn't for the commercial part of it from there. What made you decide to tackle something at that time, which was really taboo, and with some of the communities that you are represented and you are heavily involved in that might have a different viewpoint of bloodborne viruses. How did you feel the conviction, I would say, to sing on topics like that?
I mean, really, I mean, if you want to go back before that, 1989, whether you was even
Yeah,
alive.
I was at seven,
Yeah.
I was seven.
So my first album, No Reservations, had songs, one called Drink Problems, one called Caste System, Arranged Marriage is obviously another subject. It went into so many subjects right from there. And then obviously AIDS Warning, it was actually taken off, you know, all that. It was the same kind of time. Why? Because I have a view about these things. You know, I'm a human being. I like everyone, but I have a platform to sing about it and have show you my view. It's not, you know, it's not just everyone has to agree, but I have a view about arranged marriage. I have a view about casteism. I'm certainly going to sing about them. Why do I sing about them? Why do I sing about subjects in the first place? Where do I get that from? I get that from Jamaica. I get that from Jamaica because what was missing with Indian songs, obviously, you know, you want to be up tempo, you want to sing, you want to dance, you want to be sad. But there was a lot of consciousness with reggae music that I wasn't getting with the Asian. I wasn't getting those subjects when I was growing up with any from anyone, right? So, and the MC, the DJ, the guy that sings, you know, he was known as the reporter. He's talking about something. He's a news reporter. He would be sitting on the mic and telling you what's happening today and what happened this morning on the news. And so a lot of those DJ songs back in the day was current issues. So I put that together with this and that and that and that. And that's how you arrive at those subjects, something you feel passionate about, something you can speak about there and then, and something you can make appeal to a lot of people because you cleverly have to write those songs. You have to be clever to write about AIDS. You know, clever, not saying clever, but clever with words and clever with, you know, and what I liked at school, going back to school again, I was a writer, I was good at English, I wanted to teach English. So put that now. That's why, you know, the songs I enjoy writing, everything. And when you're writing, you're sharing your spirit, your soul, your prayers, your anger, your opinions, your dreams. It's all there in the songs. And I say to people, sometimes everyone's songs are very angry or very happy all the time. Let the songs reflect life. It's up and it's down and it's up and it's round. And those songs people have resonated with because they're not just happy. They're not just it's a balance. You can put Boom Shakalak on, you can have a dance. You can put AIDS Warning on, Overthink. You could put Om Namah Shivaya on and have a prayer. So that's sharing my life with you. So that's the reasoning behind those songs. And AIDS in particular, of course, what a big issue. What a big issue. Are you going to wait for it to hit you and your family before you have an opinion or think about it or sing about it or share it? I have a view. And I'm glad you picked that up because that went out all over the world. People are listening to that. And maybe it brings some comfort. Maybe, just shows that people are speaking, they're talking. So music doesn't go away. It's there still. So it wasn't back in the day. People are still talking about it. So that's brilliant. That's what it's about. So I say to artists again, first lesson was share your story. Second lesson is, what are you saying? Where's the messages? I don't hear that in the music. So I'm going to keep saying this in between because I know artists are listening, singers and songwriters. Use your platform, talk about politics, talk about homelessness, talk about things, poverty, talk about things that are going on in the world. I'm not hearing it. Do I have to go back and do it? Come on, you young rappers, come on. It's not about diggly 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 and the faster and the better and that it's about that message that someone's going to say 10 years later, that song touched my soul, changed my life. I'm missing that, Ricky. I'm missing it. So.
Obviously, we're in the reflection mode in that now, but your journey to the studio and your family, because it's kind of a break from the traditional path that would have been. A lot of pressure on there, what you would have seen, especially in that area, everyone going into kind of the more stereotypical kind of jobs and pathways. You went a little bit against the grain, and not just that, you had a different style with the music that you were going in there. Can you just tell me a little bit about that journey to the studio and the choice of the style of your music?
The journey to the studio. I mean, the studio, before they got into the studio, I was involved with sound systems. So people that don't understand sound systems, the big speakers out there's a big culture from Jamaica where you set up your sound and back in the day, you'd put a vinyl on, the B side would be instrumental, so everyone get a chance to sing. So I grew up with that 5 years, 6 years before even going in the studio. Now people go in the studio, then perform. We were performing, taking every opportunity. So big respect to all the sound systems, Wasifa, Father Blue, Sifa. They know all that. I'm going to get them to listen. I'm telling you, I mean, it's the sound system movement. And they saw me growing up and at home. They knew I was playing that reggae. They knew the B-line was coming from my room upstairs. And, he loves his reggae. I think, I said, going to the studio was, if people understand reggae music, it starts off with a dub plate, one song. Yeah. So if you got a song, you cut the song and you cut actually a plate of it and you take it to the dance and you play it. And my idea was to go and make one song. That was my dream. I must be able to do a song. So I got involved with the sound systems. And my name, real name is Stephen. So everyone used to call me Steve, and I used to drive the van. I bought my own van for my own sound. Steve the van man. Call Steve the van man, the Indian van. They'd call him all the black guys. And I used to drive all the sounds everywhere back in the day before going to the studio. Yeah. And one day, I loaded up the sound. I think it was in Wales. We were playing a party. Wooligan Sound, Orthodox. Are the massive, set up the sound, and no one is in the room. Yeah, just before the party. And I put the vinyl, I turned it over, and I took the mic out. It's messing about at home. And I thought, I used to do this at home, let me just try. And I started chatting. And the manager came in, he goes, "Who's that? Who's that on the?" He goes, "It's Steve, the Indian, the van driver, he's on the mic." Right. So I literally. He goes, "Right, that's it. You're doing that tonight." I said, "No, not in a chance am I doing that tonight." He goes, "Yes, you are." He's woolly good. And anyway, I went back to the van. I went to sleep. I have to sleep before I could drive the van back. So he knocked the van at 1 o'clock in the morning. He goes, "Get up and come and do it." I said, "No way." And this night it's rammed. This party, blues party, is rammed. So he sneaked me in. He's got me in. He's got me and got me behind the mic. And he said, "Do the same thing." And I went in and I started singing. So it was. Oh, Sharon, yes, she a black, but me a Indian. She a 23, but me just 21. Me live in New Delhi, but she live in Jama. And the place went crazy. Yeah. And just from that response is why I went into the studio. I said, "I need to go and record this song. I need to go and do it." And that was it. Someone, pushing you. Someone said, "Wake up, go and do that." Me taking the little opportunity. And from there, I went in the studio. And Simon and Diamond, my cousins, had a studio. I begged them. I said, "Come on!" And they said, "No, no. What you want to do in the studio?" So people turned you away, and they, you know, they helped me in the end. And 89 did a song called "Movie Over India," and that was the one record I wanted to make, and I made it, and I released it myself. And well, I went to everyone liked it. They said, "Oh, can I have a copy?" And I thought, "What am I going to do? How am I going to make any copies?" So I ended up making 500 copies of this movie over India, 1989. Everyone's laughing at me. Why have you made 500? I only wanted 10. You know what I mean? So I literally went out to all the record shops, distributed them myself. And looking back at it, as a little entrepreneur, I made a record. I cut the record. I've, you know, manufactured, got it manufactured, put a label on it, made a name up, Apache Indian. Let's just
Oh,
get
yeah,
this
but
all
what? Okay, the name. Let's get to the name.
It was
What?
that. It was that. I was filling in the form in for that record, and they said, "Can you put a name down?" I just wanted one record out. I said, "I ain't got a name." And I always used to listen to Supercat, the Wild Apache from Jamaica, big artist. And I said, "Apache, I'm Indian. Apache Indian. That sounds good to me." I never thought of a second record. So it was just a case of filling the form in. That's how it started. See, there you go.
This is man, I've never heard these stories before, you
Yeah,
know.
see, that's why I'm going the stories, because this is exclusive. I've never told the stories before. So.
So you know, but then okay, here we go then. Here we go. So you've made the song. Obviously, you've got you're blessed in both worlds. You know that side. You're in the area where it's like the hub of Bhangra, Punjabi music as well. Like, how are you seeing? So like, okay, this is a horrible question to kind of ask, and I don't mean it in that way, but nowadays, you know, you hear the rhetoric, the talk about cultural appropriation, you know, what you've taken from that. And if you looked at it now compared to what you were then, how does that conversation come into it? Because like, were you treated any different back then from both communities? Were you accepted in both communities? Were you able to promote your music at that time in both of them as well? Because like, could Apache Indians survive now if you came out?
Yeah, no, it's a very, very good question. And I'll go back to those times. So, like you said, you know, about the riots, and there was a racial tension in Handsworth and blah, blah, blah. And I'm coming out, right? I'm coming out with the lines in my head. I'm Apache Indian, and I'm with the. So the Indian, the Asian community, they didn't get it. It was trying to be black, Kalabangya, right? And the parents would get it. Oh, what happened to your son? Especially before I had the lines, I had dreadlocks. Before that, right? So I even tried to grow them, and yeah, there was criticism. You know, what is he doing? Is that before releasing a record, I'm out with the sound systems, I'm coming back at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I, you know, I'm doing this and I'm doing that. I just was following my passions and dreams. I, you know, I'm going to the reggae shows. No, there wasn't many Asians there at all. Sometimes from the black people, they look at you and thinking, what, I would be the only Asian person in a Hummingbird, or in, you know, in a Forum or something, and they're thinking, you know, what? Yeah. And I'm thinking, because I grew up how I grew up. And I told you the story with the Anna group. I couldn't, sometimes I couldn't see it. I couldn't even, I think, you know, I belong where I belong. So you can't take this away from me. I was never shy to walk into that place. You know, now I go around the world and walk into places of God knows how many people from, and it doesn't, you know, there's like a something around me to say, you know, there's a strength. You came, you understand. I make an effort to understand the cultures around me. Unless you do that, there will be barriers, there will be stereotypes, there will be a lack of understanding of that person. That's why the Academy worked, because the Academy brought together people now from Eastern Europe, people from everywhere, and they played music together. And then you can speak later. But how do you bring people together? You have to find ways of bringing people together. Anyway, so yeah, I mean, I had it from both sides. It wasn't that bad. But I'll tell you what, going back to the music, when the music was released, there was no face, there was no internet, there was no phones. So he actually didn't know who was on the record. Gala, Indian, two
My
people,
cousin
three people.
Hodge came over in my mum's son, the eldest mum's son, and he came over and he had a copy of your song. I think it might have been Arranged Marriage,
Yeah.
and he played it, and we were like, I remember we used to have like the family stereo,
Yeah.
and he played it, and I remember like either my dad or someone saying like, oh, this Gala singing like Punjabi.
Yeah, right.
And then he got, and then he was just listen to it, and then he
Yeah.
said, he goes, nah, he's Indian. And we
Yeah.
were like, Nah, impossible. No way. Impossible.
And the beauty of that was that around the world, and the music, that then they judged you only by the music. If you like it, you're playing it, you're interested. But now people are judging you by the picture and the face. And would Apache Indian survive now? And they know he's Indian, you know everything about him. You don't know about the music yet. So now you're giving everything away on this social media. No one's even heard your music. Back in the day, they couldn't know who I was. That was a secondary thing. Go on, Abanda, right? Who is this guy? Or is it two people? Is it a made-up thing? Is it a gimmick? We want to see this. But so with the black community, to tell you the truth, I had to earn my respect. I mean, going to Jamaica, working Bob Marley Studios, Sly and Robbie. I presented MTV from Jamaica with Patra, 13 episodes. I presented Radio One and had Gregory Isaacs and Shaggy. I've worked with a lot of the artists around the world. I've collaborated with a lot of the Shaggy to, Luciano, okay, recently. So it's hard to earn that respect, but they have taken me into their industry. They've heard the songs I've done. They see that we do. They see an understanding and love of the culture. But you know what? The Asians are a little bit slow. They'll criticize you first. And already, there's a lack of support in the Asian world for a lot of things with the music and culture. But then, 30 years ago, they were reluctant to thinking, go on, get there, go on. But as soon as you got to number one in the reggae charts and you was in the pop charts with Arranged Marriage, then they'll say, oh, what happened, Abanda? Yeah, he's one of ours, right? So I'm encouraging the Asian community, get behind your people now. Don't wait for them to I literally had to break into another market for everyone to say, whoa. Yeah, man, right. So it shows them that, and what the most important thing was, even for my parents, let alone the culture, was they saw that from the first record up, I kept the Indian, I kept the Punjabi. So he wasn't trying to be black, obviously, if he's recording movie over India, Chak De and Dan Raj, and his name's Apache Indian. He ain't trying to be black at all. He's trying to do the music that he loves, add the thread of who he is and where he's coming from. Nothing could be clearer. Nothing could be truer, original, but that was me. Was it a formula for that? So they actually were happy. Okay, Punjabi, 1, 2, 3, and sweet like jalebi and Sony Curry. So it made them proud. And obviously, those songs then became massive hits in India. Parents are proud again. So it took a while for even my parents, let alone the culture. But look at how we have changed that culture. Look how we have created that space and people enjoy that music around the world. Because people are growing up the same, weren't they? In Toronto, in New York, in these places. So music did a lot. Wow, brilliant. Right from Handsworth and Birmingham. Go on.
Just building on the last question in terms of if there was an Apache that came out now, how difficult would it be? And what's your opinion of the multicultural kind of music that's out there at the moment, especially in both scenes?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very different business now. Apache Indian or not. The industry changed with the internet, with the iTunes. The music isn't worth money anymore. It costs to make money here, make music, and you put it out for nothing. People are taking it for nothing. So where's the business model in it, if you like? The kids have to do everything themselves now. The photo shoots, the video shoots, everything they have to do. Where does the money come from? So there's a breakdown somewhere, and we haven't helped. So my day was back in the day. I got signed for a big chunk of money, and off it goes. And they invest millions of pounds to make you what you are. And it doesn't happen anymore, or it happens for a few. And then you see these X factors come on that all they're doing is, from an industry point of view, they're cutting to the chase. Right, let's see who's great, and let's release them. They're not even thinking about careers or how they're going to suffer or whatever. How do you help our kids? How do you help the Asian kids who we don't even have an infrastructure? Is there an Asian urban chart somewhere? All these TV stations that we have, Jere Sare, Starz, whatever, there's not one place you can perform. Real Talk was the only place you could perform. It wasn't a chat show. It opened with a band and it closed with a band, right? So I'm trying to give people opportunity to speak and to sing their heart and give, here's a platform for you. I'm using my name, using Brit Asia's name. Who's doing that now for anyone? And because industry changed, what did the UK do from a radio point of view? Did they say, we're going to play now, 25% of our music is going to be from this city, of old and new. We're going to play at least 25% of our play has to be to help the kids. No one's doing anything. So I always try to come out with ideas and think out the box. At the academy, it was the same. Let me teach the kids that want to get involved with music what it's about. And not just that it happens overnight and you can get on TV in a minute, a career. So I'm not seeing that. I'm not seeing radio support really for young people. Music business is hard, but the Asian music business, if I can help with anything, we're trying to do that and have more shows about that. But I get the calls and I get the emails from people who are struggling with this, can't get a player with this. Can you help me, Apache? And it takes me back to when I was there. So you have a passion to want to help them, but I'm struggling with the industry. We don't have an equivalent then to the MOBOs. MOBOs on TV for the last 25 years. So like, where's our equivalent? So come on. Are we moving forwards or backwards? We should have a place on TV by now to showcase our talents. And someone picks it up and says, Asian Network's a great platform to get to Radio One, Extra One, FM, that platform. If they're not going to champion a singer, we haven't had anyone in the chart, Asian person in the charts for 20 years. I'm not saying just their fault, but a part of the industry. Where's our Asian music industry?
I
Where
think
is
what's
it?
happening is I would definitely see I've seen a little slight change in the wave in the last sort of couple of years where Warner and Universal, some of these big ones are starting to buy a lot of the catalogs now of Asian artists. And we've seen some of the biggest audiences in the UK with like Gunnar and Diljit and all these guys coming over. I do see that, but we're talking a very small amount of people within there. But I have a one, I want to get your opinion on something which I kind of ask a lot of the guests who come on. Is that what one of the bits like I'm really struggling to see the next generation of creatives, especially from a media point of view, kind of and content creators coming through, especially let's say UK, or have a lean towards the Bhangra industry or the music scene, whatever it may be. And I don't think it helps when some of the biggest artists who have come over here to perform don't even go to our biggest radio stations like the Asian Network to do an interview or anything from there, and may not even give smaller content creators an opportunity to do an interview from there. You know, what's your messages around that? Because if you didn't do some of the early radio pirate stations around and get your name about, there's a strong argument you may not have been as successful as where you are, regardless of how successful your music was, because that was the groundwork and foundation. You needed to perform first before going into a studio, and that was because how your name was on there. But if you're not going to have access to people and to do interviews, or it's costing you money to do it, you're going to stop. And then what are you just aiming for? The one GQ magazine or a mainstream magazine to give you that break? Because the industry here in terms of media is dead. What's some of your thoughts on what I've said from there? Do you agree, disagree, or?
I mean, what's the direct question? I mean, with as far as interviews concerned, every interview for me in my life is important, big or small. And from it's not about doing the small ones. Yeah, we had the pirate radio stations. There wasn't even an Asian network when I started. There was a few scattered stations around. That's why I'm so passionate about those stations, because we helped build them too. We helped build an industry. It wasn't just them helping us, we were helping them. That they needed artists, we needed that platform. Every single interview in every single country has been important. We used to fly to just to place like Japan to do interviews for 3 weeks, not even shows, before the phones and things, just interviews. I would now, you know, we're doing podcasts, we're doing small interviews, we're doing big interviews. Yesterday I did interviews across the country on the BBC, 37 regions with the BBC. I did back-to-back interviews across from Plymouth to bloody Leeds. Absolute respect, yeah, for the BBC with a new single. So every station is important. You mentioned artists and the industry. The artists that you named are from different countries. The big artists, oh, okay, fair enough. Do they come here and touch base with the people that have supported them? Is that the question? No, they don't. I don't see them do that. They should. I have to go. When I go to India, I'm circling around to that station, Michi FM. I'm a part of their industry. I just had a big song with Honey Singh. I work at Asha Bose. I work at A. Rahman. I've been in some films. So I'm a part of that industry. I know how they move and how they are passionate about it. Why did we fall behind? You know, I see Toronto building up. I see. So we were a leading, you know, we lead. We're one of the leaders in the country, in the world, from music and film and TV. It's become tough for the next generation. It's become really, really hard for the next generation. They're struggling with finances. They're struggling with a very competitive world. They're sort of suffering with saturation from the internet and all the rest of it. It's very hard to, you know, does my story still work for them? You know, in this time, I was like, there's an ability of times have changed. Times have changed. But I'm saying, as a country, are we counteracting that change? Are we trying to put laws in? Are we trying to put places if we just focus on the Asian and I, you know, music, because that's what I'm involved in, we don't even have any rules, regulations, committees, charts, TV, nothing for that young kid to aspire to. Where's the Asian? So Asian, young Asian artist who does hip hop, rap. Yeah, but he's Asian, yeah. If it's too hardcore for the Asian networks and the Asian stations around the country, who's playing him? If the black stations ain't playing him, who's playing him? The black stations could be waiting for the Asian stations to champion him. So he's ended up in this gray area of no man's land. So I've done some songs that haven't appealed to either or the part, and they've just gone to nowhere. But it didn't resonate with anybody, still my songs. But where does the kid go now? Where's the chart that you can look forward to going to? Where's the award that you can go and try to get? Who's giving the awards out? Which Asian committee? Or is it just the guy that's keeping some awards because Asians love getting awards?
I think what happened was, I think BritAsia tried to do kind of the revamp of it and go forward. I think COVID like obviously played it from there, but it weren't their responsibility just to do it from there. It needed something more national, like MOBO-esque in terms of kind of...
BBC. I'll come back to the BBC. We had a BBC Menlo, we had BBC things. Obviously, there's cuts, there's things.
Yeah.
But the platform hasn't moved. I think the BBC themselves, they're the only ones can BBC Asian TV awards, Ryan TV. Mark Stripple, I know he's trying to do that for a long time with Amherst, with this. I worked with all of them. They know, they'll call me, come on, Patrick, we need your headline with the band. We need to make this look good. I've always contributed. Come down, free, let's do it. So that's why I have an opinion and I have a passion.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
And I have, I've continued suggestions. I haven't walked away from it. If you can ever get those people in the room, we start building a committee, something. Like you may have BritAsia, may give you an award, but who's giving you that award? Simon Cowell, Connor, but who's giving you it? If Rishi Rich had an award and there was a young producer getting it and putting it on his shelf, he said, this is from Rishi Rich. Jay Sean, there's a name behind it. Who's giving who and anything? So let's do this properly. And is it going to happen in my lifetime? So then you can't look at the kids and say, you know, they're a bit low and it's a bit competitive. We haven't given them an infrastructure, especially with the music. We haven't given them a place that they can go to, a networking session for the Asian. Where's the networking session for the Asian musicians?
So yeah, I've had like a conversation with Gubsy, Oman Haya, what I've had on here, and Jazzy B as well, one of the concerns that they were saying was, we know that there's difficulties in bringing the new artists on in the scene, but the musicians is a real, real bigger concern, where the amount of new tabla players, door players, sarangi players, where are they coming from? You know, there's a real lack of shortage of musicians coming in.
I tell you what, because we've had a history and a generation, a culture that there's always been tabla players and always been musicians, singers, they haven't gone anywhere. They're there. God has given them a talent to play and sing. But what did they do with it? This is the point. They haven't gone anywhere. They're there. There's a kid there that's dying to sing. There's a kid there dying to play. But when he looks at the opportunities, is there, like I said, is there a place where we've got... I mean, I did a show called Soul Music. We had Gabrielle on one stage. We had Malky on one stage. Asia, it was like a Jules Holland show where you could play live music, a different band. Where's that where a kid can play? We have nothing, but we have 15, 20 Asian TV stations. So there's the opportunities that have gone. But if a kid saw that, he's going to say, I want to be like that. I want to get up there. I want to do that. And we're not inspiring them enough. Musicians are suffering. Musicians suffering or artists suffering. The artist that told me that he wanted to be a rapper at 17, who's now 27, who's left the country, or trying to make it somewhere else because this was his dream. And there's no one's helping him, and he's given up, and he spent his last buck on it. But they won't give up on their dream. What happens to him? Where he suffers all his... Forget the money. He's just like, oh, this was in me. I knew it. And did we take his dream away? Are we taking the dreams away because we've become not selfish, but we're not looking at the industry. We're looking at ourselves because maybe the world got harder. Things got tougher. Leave the industry to... There's pioneers in the industry should be coming together and saying, let's help these kids. It makes me feel like one of them, you know what I mean? Or feel one of those kids that people helped me, Maxi Priest helped me, Frankie Paul helped me, Island Records helped me, the Sound Systems. I wouldn't be here without community, wouldn't be here without those connections. Just had a big song with Honey Singh from India, massive song. So again, you know, and he said that his story is that when I was 10 years old, I saw arranged marriage on TV and I wanted to be like that man. Look at that great story. I inspired him.
Yeah, Mika Singh said something, you know, yeah. When it's in the movie as well.
And he's a massive, massive Bollywood star, probably the biggest. And I see him, he touches my feet and he starts singing, a time has come, man. He goes, I grew up with it. I've got it in my head. Right. And what great compliment that is. And, you know, how much music means to people. So don't take the dream away and the passion away from those new generation of writers. Reach out to them. Bring them forward. Someone in the industry who has a network or has something. I'm just one man in it. So someone bring them forward and show it, because they're there. They are there. There's door players, there's female musicians, door players, there's this, there's that, there's door players, there's singers, writers, and what they see of the industry. Would you tell your own kid if he's got talent to go into that industry? It's a mess.
Yeah.
And
I'm going to try and sprinkle a little bit more positivity on this week, because, you know, you've got all the plaques at the back, and
yes.
I need to know a few stories about these, some of it on there. So, is there, and I want to ask this question first, and then I want you to kind of reflect back on some of the hits that you got there.
Okay.
When was it the point that you thought, and this is, I'm not asking it for you to be as an arrogant question for you, and I won't see it in that way, and hopefully the viewers and listeners don't take your answer in that way. When did you know that you kind of made it, where you were like, uh-oh, like, actually, I've hit a height here. This is crazy.
I mean, I thought I had that feeling when I did. Well, I was nervous when I did Arranged Marriage on Top of the Pops. But Boom Shakalak is the answer. Boom Shakalak, when it went, I mean, having a chart hit in this country is okay, top 20, top 10. But, you know, when you have a song like that, which is then in Dumb and Dumber and goes around, that song, when you have a big international hit, and I don't know how many people have had a big international where every single person knows a song and they know your face, it doesn't matter what color, it doesn't matter what country, it doesn't matter whatever. At that point, you think, right, you're living in a different world. So it's not like you so much made it, but you think, wow, is that what music does around you? One song.
What was the story of Boom Shakalak? Or how did that come about? Because the style of your vocal was a little bit different to from what I was used to at that time. What was the origin story of that song?
So the story behind that song was, in the reggae world, you know, it goes through phases, everyone jumps on certain rhythms and certain things. So in the reggae world, in the 90s, there was a shift of mixing that reggae with that roots and blues kind of sound. So you had Twist and Shout, if you remember, Shaka Dibbs and Pliers, 60s cover. Then you had Compliments of Your Kiss. So the groove changed a bit. And then you had Shaggy, Oh Carolina. Again, it was that bluesy kind of reggae kind of feel. And so everyone tried to jump on that and do their version of a little style of that. And a lot of those songs, Twist and Shout, Tease Me. I don't know where the Tease Me was, but even Carolina, Compliments of Your Kiss, all those were covers, but still good. I mean, they changed the groove, and that's what inspired me. And I said, okay, as a musician, what can I do? But I don't do covers. Let me do something on that kind of feel. It's a different timing. And so anyway, so that kind of, you know, what was happening out of Jamaica inspired me. And I wrote, then my producer came around and we played with some ideas, and he goes, yeah, this works. So he left, and I got up the next day and I wrote this song. Probably took me 45 minutes. Sun was shining. I was sitting on my table just there in Birmingham, and sun was shining. And I just literally, so what else would you write to a song like that? You know what I mean? So, but afterwards, everyone enjoying it. But it literally was, what, you know, one of the quicker songs I wrote, just went off the vibe. But a lot of the vibe came from Jamaica. So sometimes there are people questioning that song. Oh, it sounds a bit like Shaggy, isn't it? And it's a bit like, this was an original song. It was my song. I use my voice how I want, whether it's Punjabi, whether it's hardcore, is this, whether it's that. It works everywhere I go. I love performing it to this day. It's been in, you know, as I said, 10 Hollywood films. Another film right now, I don't know whether you know, there's a film right now.
My kids are watching That's Christmas. Yeah.
That Christmas.
Is it? That's Christmas, right?
Yeah. That Christmas is number
yeah,
one.
That Christmas. It's on Netflix right now or something like that, yeah?
Yeah.
They're watching it right now. And I said, they said, oh, who you got on the podcast today? And I And I explained who they were. And I go, you know the song Boosh? And they go, yeah.
Look
They
at
know
that.
the song. So I
Yeah,
was
look
like,
at
yeah,
that.
it's him. And they're all,
A
and they're
whole new
8 and 12.
generation. Yeah. So that's the 10th Hollywood movie. That Christmas, everyone watched it. It was number one on Netflix
So
that
is
Christmas.
just answer me this bit, and you don't have to go into that too much. Are the royalties very nice from it?
The royalties are good from that, from generally people who are writers. And if it's, you know, if someone picks the, now even that releasing songs is one thing, but someone placing it and picking it up and putting it in a movie, that's a whole nother world that people should get involved in. Obviously, what it shows, it can be done in it. As writers from this country, we can, the Asian writers, call you what you like, British writers, we can reach Hollywood. And it wasn't a one-off. Dumb and Dumber 1, Dumb and Dumber 2, Scooby-Doo 2, a film called Biodome. This year, two movies, one called Babes, which is showing on Emirates First Class, if anyone goes Emirates, and one called That Christmas. So two, and it was on McDonald's commercial this year. It's been on 200 TV commercials. Last year, it was on Links with Anthony Joshua.
Yeah. So how does it come about, like, for the layperson? Do they, if a company want it, do they go through, do they contact you to say, can we use a song? Or like, is it
No,
just, how does that work?
I mean, they go to your publisher, but the reason the company want it in the first place is because it's a big hit and they've heard it from somewhere else. So they're going to find, right, for this year, I'm looking at That Christmas, for example, small little bit in a Christmas movie. They could have picked any song in it.
It's number one in on the on Netflix film at the moment, because obviously it's topical, it's Christmas.
Yeah, but they
That's
could have.
another generation who exposed
Yeah,
these songs.
but they could have picked any song. So it makes you feel really, really proud that it's in there. Yeah, new generation, but you know how music from that time and how we can, you know, still 30 years later. So people really need to think about songs, their craft, you know, their music, their lyrics. I might have written something down quick, but I'm thinking about it. I'm trying to groove with this. I wrote a song, Bromtown, the other day. It took me 8 months. I wrote ta-na-na-na-na. It took me 45 minutes. So, you know, look at your craft, go with the vibe sometimes. Maybe don't work too hard on a song. Maybe work a little bit harder on a song, but you know when it's right. But yeah, those are the rewards. I mean, fantastic. The kids are singing it. I mean, I love it.
So what was the reaction around the world? What were some of the stories that you can, which are safe to kind of say on here when you're going around on tour with, especially when you're at your peak, your music peak there in terms of like the release and impact? It's a safe space.
I mean, it's great stories from everywhere. Everyone's enjoying it. I mean, the hard, if you want to go into the hard side, it was a struggle for me. I mean, a lot of success very, very quickly. I mean, first three songs were number one in the reggae charts. I got signed there. Look, that was £250,000 at Island Records when I was 23. I'm just a working class family. Straight to Jamaica. This, I mean, is a whirlwind, but it didn't come without its problems. I mean, did I know anything about the music industry at that level? Did I want to be a musician? I said, I told you I want to be a teacher, want to release one song. Sometimes God's got a different plan for you. As much as you're trying to go this way, he's got it. But all the things that you started with made sense. You know, the writing, the teaching, the culture, Miss Codrington, to every part of my life makes sense. That's why I can answer every question, because it was couldn't be any more real or true. It's like just reading back the story. So yeah, I mean, it was difficult times getting used to the business. Managers come and go. Record company, I got dropped from Island Records after two albums. I did two albums, which are all great, and it wasn't about album sales. It's because, you know, maybe we weren't. Management problems and this and that and money problems comes in. And remember people, when you become an artist and you put that record out and you're making money, you've just set up a business. Remember that. You've just set up a business. I didn't really think about it like that. You just opened a shop. And to put that record out, if you're getting money, you have to have a bank account. And if you have a bank account and you're getting money from anywhere to do with music, you have to pay taxes. And so it goes on. So a lot of people fall down just there because the business side of the back thing wasn't done properly. And, you know, and mine wasn't, you know, it was okay. But we had, you know, when they got a lot of money coming in, you got a lot of problems too, right? So, and getting used to it overnight and the people around you getting used to it. People don't realize this. If Apache Indian is famous, his sister becomes Apache Indian sister. The father becomes Apache Indian. Maybe they don't want it. Maybe the kids want to go to school and don't want the teacher to say, guess who these kids are? You know what I mean? So there's a backlash to it.
So
There's a front.
how did you balance the family life with that? Did it cause problems in that way then, in like bringing?
It caused problems. I mean, I had children before I started music business. So I had my son already. So yeah, I mean, they all had to get used to it. I could take them somewhere and everyone's stopping me and the kids sometimes are crying. Oh, you're not going to get your McDonald's until we get an autograph and the kids will be crying. You know what I mean? Or harassed at school or. You know, if I'm not doing so well, or your dad's, you know, it's whatever. kids are cruel in the playground, so you're going to get both sides of that. Who teaches the kids?
Andrew, I don't know this.
Who teaches the kids how to deal with that? Who teaches me how to deal with that? Who teaches me to tell my dad, "Dad, don't go down the street and tell everyone who you are"? Because another day, da, 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 and so on, so there's a privacy that you try to balance. Now there's the internet. What privacy you've got left? You could be sitting in a restaurant. Somebody else would tweet, "Guess who's hit this restaurant with his family?" So somebody else would do it. So the privacy is so important when you get to those levels, and not just for yourself, for people. Worry about mental health. Who can you speak to? Back in the day, we don't come from a culture of speaking about mental health. Music business, when I started and all that was going on, we never had an industry here for me to come back and call someone. Who else was in the industry? Who was the one that I can call? So I felt sometimes very alone on my own, to tell you the truth.
Did you have any you mentioned some of the big artists that you said. You just said Maxi Priest. That when you reflect back on it, was there any kind of fond conversations that you remember having with some of those massive stars at the time that helped you along your way as well?
Yeah, I mean, lots of words of wisdom. I learned a lot of things from, people like Maxi, Luciano. It's all his words of wisdom and culture and not to give up. I remember someone saying, I think it's Luciano, it doesn't matter if your name, if you're up and down or in life, you still got a name. So your name can, sometimes people come back after 2 years, after 3 years, your name's your name. Always defend your name, people. You could be out, down, cold, you could be you could be poor and humble, but you still got your name. So never stop believing in yourself. Never stop achieving. Doesn't matter if you're up or down. Don't give in. So these are the kind of, a lot of things I've picked up from a lot of people. Oh, there's so much. I mean, Rita Marley. I toured around with Bob Marley's wife in Japan. 14 cities we did in over a couple of years. And I end up headlining the shows with 100,000 people. You can still see it on YouTube, Tokyo. And they put me right next to Rita Marley and the i3s. And she said to me just before I went on stage, she said, "You know what, Apache, when you go on that stage, make sure you say all the right things, because if your Queen of England was here, she wouldn't have all those people in front of her. So you have a big responsibility." So I say to people, yeah, don't worry about the songs you're singing on stage. What's your message in between the songs? What are you going to go on the podcast and say, "Come and buy my new single" all the time? What are you saying when you're on the road? What's the message to the fans? So the message behind my music is very, very important. It's in the music. But when people speak to me, that's why I keep speaking. I keep speaking, and I haven't even spoke about music to you really. About go and buy this single, hey, go and watch my video. I'm talking about what it means to me as a human being, and look at my album, No Reservations, Make Way for the Indian, Time for Change, Soul of the Movement. I'm always on something. There's something always to be done. Come out of the comfort zone, people. There's something to be done. We have to look at where we are, look at what we can go, look at what we've got, look how we can help people. There's new issues and things on the streets. People are suffering, and no one, we don't have that support system in place for them. So I'm that person that can help, wants to help. I know you're one of those people. Bad people come together in certain places, yeah. Good people don't come together. Where do all good people meet and greet? Right there on Ricky Street there.
On the bad
Yeah.
note, yeah. No, I think it's I know that over how much a kind of a the social activist that you are, and that's why I kind of said that in the philanthropy, especially around when you set up AIM. So that was Apache's music school that he bought for me, but I visited it a good few times. And I've done some drug education there as well for some of the youth. But and it was a central hub as well. And I remember speaking to a young kid there at the time, and I think you had your music collection up, and it was on a slideshow or something like that, and there was a slide on there where it had two of your songs, one which was Independent Girl
Yeah,
with Maljit Singh,
that's right. Yeah.
and then the other one, which I don't think I know anyone who doesn't like that song. That song is amazing.
Brilliant song. Yeah.
And a lovely video to go alongside it is in there. But the other one was Dil Luk Gaya with Jazzy B, and that I was trying to explain the impact, because at the time of where it was, the Independent Girl, you kind of came back into the Punjabi music at that time, especially at that point when and people saw you from where you had been before, and you're still working with the Punjabi industry and working with it from there. But I think with Jazzy when he was at that point was massive. You came with Dilupia, that new sound of music, and the song itself just connected like crazy. And then you hear it now, especially in kind of like boiler rooms and raves, where it, if it where it comes on, it's a kind of forever song. And that, how much energy do you feed off that, especially when young people are asking you about your career?
I mean, it was an amazing song. It's an evergreen song, and it's nice to have, a boom shakalak equivalent, if you like, in the Punjabi world. Look at that. It's one of those evergreen songs. It keeps coming up. It keeps getting played. It's played today at weddings, and it's just the memories of doing that song, recording that song. Chinder Shinda, I went to school with him. For people that don't know, I was the same class as his brother. Jazzy B, we were friends. We started in a kind of rough at the same time. We started our careers, late 80s, 90s. And for him to ask me to be on it, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah. So for him to ask me to be on it was a great pleasure. So I'm looking at the magic of that song. I remember doing the video on the streets of Bombay. Again, new ideas. And they said, I want to put you in a suit. I said, I don't want to wear a suit. And he goes, no, please do it for me. And I put this suit on, very uncomfortable. And I said, okay, we do it for the concept. And I mean, massive. I'm iconic that it keeps getting played. Respect to all the people behind it, and generations have enjoyed that song and the music, and that's what it's all about—to see other people singing it, to see other people dancing to something that we wrote many years ago. Wow, that's the best feeling out of the lot. There we go.
I
Are you
think
still
you
there?
just, yeah, no, you're right. So, in terms of what, yeah, we do come up in a time of reflection, especially towards the end of the year and looking around. So, when you look back on your career, what was some of the key advice that you would have given yourself at at key points, especially early on when you were at your height of your success? Now in sort of your freedom phase of your career, where you're able to kind of pick and choose what you want as well. So those three kind of sections I've just highlighted, what would have been the key advice you would have given yourself at each one of those stages? Because as you say, some artists are who do kind of follow the podcast are might be in between those phases or in a particular section. What would that be?
It's a very good question. Yeah. So the first piece of advice I give myself when I started, and one of the things I mentioned is twofold, really. Learn about the business that you're in. Yeah, people know how to make records, but do you know about the business? So if you wanted to be, an accountant or a lawyer or whatever, you have to learn before you get there. A doctor, you have to learn. You can't practice it before. But in the music business, you can just join. Wow, look at it that way. Look at that. Anyone that you can come, anyone that you meet is not qualified in anything. You're not around professional people. Some may be, but there's no anything that you have to pass like a doctor to be in that same room. So that means to me that I can be in an industry and I can be number one even. I can be in a Hollywood movie. But what do I know about the music business? So this is the first thing I would teach myself. Stephen, go and learn about the business. So now I say to people, oh, you got record out, Tika. Do you know what PRS is? They say, what? I said, do you know how you get paid when you get played on radio? I what's that then? What does it stand for, PR? MCPS, mate. No. So yeah, we've got talent to put the records out, but learn about the industry, guys, as much as you can. Keep reading the books. We didn't have the internet then. Learn about it in the sense of how does it work? Music business is about lawyers, it's about accountants, it's about royalties, how to get paid, contracts, management, all these things that you have to know, even if you're at the smallest level. So unless you know about, those press releases, the bit about the marketing, about, so that's the first thing. Learn about the trade that you're in, music or otherwise. If you want to learn, if you want to work on a car, you have to learn, how to be a mechanic. Same thing. Learn more about the industry. Second thing is the financial side. Remember, it's a business. Remember, it's a business. So run it as a business. From day one, even if you only got £100 for something and it's sitting there, run it as you got £100 from Medlab, put it there. Don't touch it. Now you're learning how to run this as a business now. Invoice, so and so. Work as a professional. Otherwise, you're never going to be classed as a professional. You're never going to be, you're not running it as, what would you do if you opened a shop? You wouldn't just let people walk in and you have to run it properly. You have to go and get this. You have to go and get. So keep it running. Doesn't matter if that song wasn't a big hit song, keep it running, keep that machinery going, keep going, keep going. It's a business. Run it like a business. Think of it as a business. later on question, later on in life, to answer that question.
Yeah.
There was a middle bit. There was a
Yeah,
middle.
yeah, yeah, yeah.
The middle bit was, I wasn't. There was a part that I wasn't very happy. Everything was that, too much fame and financial problems and the family problems and the really management and everyone's going crazy and whatnot. It didn't make any. And I went into my studio and I got and I thought, I'm upset with it all. And I packed my studio down, packed it down, and I tried to find a put. To find happiness again, or find, so what I'm trying to say is that if there's a part of the music business that you don't like, is causing you grief with these problems, you can't walk away from it and start another job. It's part of your life, isn't it? Music, it's in your body. You can't just take it. You start hating your own life, then you're gonna think, okay, well, it's bringing me the too much or whatever. So I packed the studio down and set the sound system back up again. In my set the time, so I've got the decks out, I've got the vinyl out. It's all vinyl and studio here in front of me. I don't know whether you can see. So, and I went back and I pressed record and I just went back on the DJ thing. This is what made me fall in love with music. You are not going to take this away from me. So I had to re-fall in love with music again, if you like. And I did it that way, pressed record, and I messed about with some rhythms. And that then became, I took that and I turned it into an album called Karma. And everyone says that was my best album. Went back to reggae, the song called Every Day, Shackle and Chain, the song with Luciano on there. There's a song called I Pray Just with the Guitar with Peter, one of my favorite, most requested songs, acoustic song, No War, Om Namah Shivaya. It became another iconic album. So it took me to step away from it, fall back in love with it, to do what, because no one's going to take that away from me. So these are the processes kind of mentally I had to go through. And the last part of it now, where I am now, is that I want to enjoy it. I want to enjoy all of it. I have a brand name. I want to enjoy that. We recently released a song about Birmingham, Brumtown. I'm passionate about Birmingham. Let's give something back to Birmingham. So that was the theme behind that song, the thinking behind that song. Celebrate what we have again. Ta-na-na-na-na. Everyone says, oh, it reminds me of back in the day. That's what it was about. All the fans said, can we have something from back in the day? Something good, something original. Davinder Singh, big up, Davinder J. So I'm enjoying it more now. I wish I knew what I knew. Now, I wish I knew it then, kind of thing, you know what I mean? But we learn, we grow, we're up and down, we round and round, but I feel strong, I feel confident, I'm giving back loads. What's the name of the fame for? I'm an ambassador for UK Diabetes. I'm an ambassador for homeless charities. I'm an ambassador for domestic violence. Roisin, big up in the Midlands. There's various charities I'm involved in around the world. As you see, the academy. Every day, I'm helping people with something. Something. Mental health is a big thing on my list. A lot of my musical mental health. There's gaps. In politics, they're missing. People are falling through. So I try to do the best I can musically. More challenges, work with more people. I have more ambitions. It doesn't stop. I've just put a live band together. It's called the Firewater Band. We're on tour next year. So look out for live dates. I don't know whether many people are seeing me live. So look out for that world tour. We announced it. And I tell you another secret, yeah. I haven't told anyone else yet because it's a bit early, premature. But I signed a deal with Universal to make a movie about Apache Indian biopic. Don't tell anyone. Exclusive to you, yeah. So there's a movie coming out. So we've just started writing the script. I've been doing it for 2 years. So it'd probably be another 3 years, but it's a proper movie about all the thing. And even really, really in depth. So it goes through Jamaica, it comes here, and goes back and forth. But I'm so excited about that. So about 5 year plan, we're 2 years in. But keep it quiet. We'll talk about it when it comes out. Yeah. So
You need me in it. You need me in it. In some way,
get ready
shape, or
for
form. Consult me,
your
role.
get ready for your role.
I can play some moves in there. I can be original, authentic.
So I want a movie like that to again have everyone in and celebrate and but show people behind the scenes. So another many generations can look back at that and again be inspired, hopefully be inspired, they see the journey. But yeah, so working on many projects, lots of things happening. Anybody wants to get in touch with me, please get in touch with me, Apache Indian HQ, just there on the Instagram. Check out the new video. Tanana, only because it's on my own YouTube channel, and I want to invite you up and come and have a little interview on my.
I'm gonna fly down. I've got last two questions before I know you gotta step. Look how fast it's gone. You've worked with every conceivable artist, you know, that around that and peak and who at their peak at the time and stuff. Is there anyone now who you'd think that you'd love to jump on a collab with?
Yes, I would. There's a few people on the list. Capleton was on the list, but I got Capleton. So I would love to work with, from the Asian side, Gurdas Mon. I've never met him, and I got the message to him, and hopefully gets this message. So I would love to work with him. I think he has a great voice, a voice that I grew up with. Just has that smooth voice in Punjabi music that I love. His songs are so meaningful as well. So I would love to collaborate with him. I would think 99% of the collaborations I've done, I haven't arranged. I just happen to be in the right place at the right time, or someone's called me, which is, you know, just blessings, and which is great. I would love to work with Ed Sheeran. I've even seen him, heard him do some reggae stuff here and there, and he's chopping and he's skanking and stuff like that. So I would love to work with Ed Sheeran. I would love to work with a lot of my reggae legends that I grew up with. I'd love to work with Barris Hammond, Freddie McGregor. I'd love to work with Sanchez. So there's a list there. I've worked with all of them on stage around the world. I love to work with Beanie Man. I'd love to work with Beanie Man. I love him. I'd love to work with Shaggy some more. But a lot of the reggae artists I'd love to work with, because I just grew up with them. There's another song coming out with Honey Sing. Don't tell anyone that too. There's another collaboration. Brilliant song, dancehall song. It's on
No,
his next.
when the promo comes for that, I need you to have a chat with him.
Yeah, no, definitely. He's a
I met him on
he's
stage.
actually a lovely, lovely guy.
Yeah, I know he was a really. To be
Really
fair,
nice.
I met him and we put a pick up. There was some discussion going on, but I just
How is it?
my need
Did
you
you get
to kind of
him on the phone?
get him on that.
You get him on the phone, yeah.
If you can.
Oh, I'm talking to you on the phone. I'm looking for the phone.
Oh man, that's a good. All right, last question. So this is known as the bandwagon.
Okay.
Is there a bandwagon that you'd like to jump on, a bandwagon you'd like to jump off, or if there's anything that you want to get off your chest, this is your space to do so.
Oh yeah, that's a good question, isn't it? Is there bandwagon you'd like to get off? What does that
Yeah,
mean?
you don't have to kind of have something on there. It could be just anything you want to get off your chest. You can.
Okay,
If there's something that I haven't covered or you someone's burning and you just want to kind of do it, this is your space to do so.
that's a good question, that is.
Thank you.
Something like to get off, I don't know. Something like to get on. Yeah, I like to get on politics. I like to be more vocal. I found the energy and strength through the beginning. I was very vocal about things. I was talking about all the subjects and all that. And as you go through the lot, as you go through your life, and I didn't see much support, didn't see much, you know, especially from our own communities. You know, are we going? I don't know. I don't know. I just think there's a lot to be done. Sometimes I feel like, you know, I always encourage unity. I wish we had more unity, but I like to dabble with politics, to tell you the truth. The only reason I don't dabble with politics is there's too much politics in the politics. So I think that we need to go back to kind of street movements and things. So it's just, I mean, what happened in the UK recently was very disturbing for me to see. I'm sure for a lot of people to see the riots, the racial tension in these years. What's going on in the world, you know, with war and the people dying and the kids dying and the scenes that you see, and that we carry on just doing what we're doing. It's just there. So how far have we really come, guys? And you know, from a political point of view, you can talk about all the issues, but generally, on a general whole, are we in a better place, or is the world in a better place? Is the UK in a better place? Isn't everyone just working as hard as they can and enjoying less? Everyone's working to do what? It's never ending. Are we relaxing? Isn't this affecting our mental health? In this age and this time, I think we really, really need to look at just the whole state of affairs. We keep talking about these little things, and we're not getting anywhere. The NHS or this or that, we're suffering. No one's tackling the drugs issues. No one's looking at alcohol. No one's looking at real things on the streets: guns, knives. This story in Handsworth is some kid was buried 3 years old in a back garden. I mean, what? You see, the world's not in a good place. We're talking about environmental issues, which is great, you know, top of the agenda all the time, because that affects the future, but all these small things affect the future. It's affecting us right now. What about today? What about tomorrow? We can build for the future. What about today and tomorrow? And we're messing up with building railways, but we say we've got no money. The Birmingham Town Centre has been a mess for the last 10 years. How long is it going to be? So people are making mistakes. Birmingham City Council were bankrupt 4 years or 5 years ago. I mean, come on. The lunatics are running the asylum. So really need to, it bothers me because if it doesn't bother people, I don't know. So I have a name, but before the name, you just have a passion. That's why I sing, or that's why I write, But I want to see action. I want to see change. I want to see real people on TV, not people reading out of somebody else's script. I haven't got a script in front of you. There's passion, there's words, there's why do they have to get rid of the scripts, change policies, help musicians, look at the homeless, look at the places that we've got in the city that are empty. So connect some dots. So I think everyone's living in a bit of a bubble. A lot of people are left. There's homelessness, there's food banks, there's things, and they only come to the news when there's a problem, but they're still there. You don't have to wait for some kid to be stabbed to know that there's a problem with knives. There's a problem with guns on the street. It's too accessible. Where are they coming from? Ban them. Come on. So yeah, politics is the top of the agenda. I would love to jump on that. I think music, we have played with politics along the line, but they need to take more. And what's on my mind otherwise is more unity in the Asian community. I had a go at the BBC Asian Network. I wanted to get that off my chest as well. I made a statement about the Asian Network, which I love the Asian Network. What I was trying to say is lots of problems are coming to me over the years. They're not playing our music, Apache. They're doing this, Apache. They're doing that. And it went down to ageism. They're not playing my music because I'm too old and this and that. And there shouldn't be those restrictions. So Malkeet Singh made a video. He's got an MBE about the same thing. Johnny from Malap, he's got an OBE. He made a video supporting the same thing, saying that, come on, I've got Apache Indians saying the same thing. So somebody has to listen. To say that there's a blockage there, maybe you could be doing some more, but we don't want to hear these things. Oh, your baseline was too high, it was too low. People are telling me that. Until the last thing someone said to me was, the Punjabi musicians are going to the Punjabi DJs, and the Muslim DJ singers are going to the Muslim presenters, and there's all this favoritism going on. And as I said the word Muslim, and the Muslim, it seemed like there's a problem with Muslims. I'm married to a Muslim girl. I mean, I'm just about to get married to Yasmin, from a Muslim faith. So, and I have so much Muslim fans. But you pick up on that, and you take it away from the issues I'm trying to talk about. So, if anyone took offense to it, I'm sorry. Maybe I don't write script. We're just talking how we're talking. Look at the general thing I'm saying. There's a blockage. It shouldn't be about ageism. It shouldn't be. And they've lost the license nearly three or four times. I would love to talk to Mark Strippel. I know it's difficult, but we haven't grown. So unless we grow, the kids are going to lose out. They play a very, very important part in our music industry. They're the nucleus, if you like, and the frustration comes from the passion, not hate. It's want to be better. I was the first Asian DJ on Radio One, and so I don't have an opinion. I'm not just talking out of the box. And I've obviously worked around the world with radio, so I do have an opinion. And they are based in Birmingham now. And we want them to grow. And if they don't showcase what we have, the bigger boys may not care, the Asian people may not care, and then they'd get left in this gray area that who cares then? In the sense that who cares whether they grow or not? Some people have turned off from them. The regional stations I listen to more in certain cities, Sobras in Leicester and Raj FM in Birmingham, call it what you like. But we need to see them grow. And the biggest thing is why we have an opinion is because obviously we pay their wages. It comes out of tax money, isn't it? There's millions of pounds to go to making that work. And is it delivering? Could that money be go to somewhere better? Because we keep talking about cuts and this and that and that. So let's have results. Let's have results. Let's have progress. And there's no hate, there's no nothing. Don't pick up on one word and blow it out. But yes, I'm sorry if it was phrased differently. If I said Mark Strippel was the head of the Asian Network, and he's a white guy, and there was a communicator. Is that being racist? Or is that a view that if you're talking to someone in India, you can't even speak the language? Well, I thought he did a great job. But some people may look at that as for the but so let's not be so sensitive, guys. I'm a guy that tries to make things work. If you have to step back, don't hate on me. Let's try to move forward. And if you know me, it's about unity, strength. So the Asian community, we don't have the Asian footballer on really on the pitch. We don't have Asian charts back and forth. We shouldn't be talking about it. we grew up thinking, is there an Asian person on top of the pops? And finally, Apache got there, and we're back to that. Oh, is it? Come on, give the young actors a chance. Why are we seeing the same news readers and actors on TV every day? There's so much waiting. Like there is musicians, writers, musicians, I mean singers. So a lot of people are frustrated. Give people opportunities. Young people out there keep taking the opportunities. It's not just young people. Older people, someone who's 35 still wants to be have that dream as a don't take it off him. So whatever your dreams and passions are, I went with them. God bless me. And you know what? My biggest secret is, like you talk about, go back to mom and dad and go back to school and go back to everything of why I survived. I think the real answer to end your whole show was that I move with manners and respect. It's always respect for cultures, for languages, from who I am to my parents. I was the head prefect at school, for example. So my parents had nothing to complain about. I wasn't in a gang. I never carried a knife. I never carried a gun. And I navigated myself through, even those gangs were there. The knives and guns were there. I navigated through life, keeping out of trouble, working on my passions, my dreams, and the things of my family and my friends. And I managed to take that blessing to the world. So just be good. Just be good. Have manners, have respect for the elders, for where you're coming from, for anyone that you meet. Don't let the music get to your head. Don't let the fame get to your head or the money get to your head. Keep humble, keep nice. And anywhere you go, you share that love, that spirit that God gave you. And then you get more blessings. That's how it works.
Thank you. I just wanted to say, anybody who's watched this or listened, it's absolutely fascinating to hear how clearly somebody who's so driven from how young you were and the careers and the heights that you achieved and the energy that you still got and have that activism still within there. So I really wanted to cut. I'm really glad it went the way it did because that's one of the things I wanted to kind of showcase for you. So. Just a big thank you, for everything that you've done and in the future, anything that you ever want to plug or push forward, this is a platform for you as well. So absolutely brilliant. I really enjoyed the conversation and I wish you all the best in the future.
Thank you very much. You're a star yourself. I followed your journey as well. You've actually inspired me. When you came to the academy, you might be inspired, but I was inspired by your passion. I was learning from all the things that you was telling me about the work that you do. There's a lot of work that you've done. I would love to interview you for my
Wow.
channel as well. I thought it was going to be a bit back and forth, but
Yeah, no, I just think it's just, I think
it was
the
bang
reason why
on.
I started it was for, for the likes of yourselves to have these conversations, look at the sort of fresh stories that somebody may never have heard, you know what I mean? So
And
it's
that's the beauty,
fun.
because we have the friendship and we know each other. This conversation was exclusive. It hasn't happened before. It's personal. There's a lot of love there, a lot of passion, but it's only because of you. So thank you
Thanks.
so much. God bless you.
Thank
No, it's
you
thank you. God bless you.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.